Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, and thanks for joining us for a new series. This week, we'll be asking our panelists whether their club did the transfer business they were hoping for. And as an Arsenal fan, I can't wait for that conversation. It has, of course, been the winter break for the Premier League, and we'll be giving out a special prize for any viewer who spotted a Premier League footballer not sunning themselves in Dubai. And we'll be hopping onto the managerial merry-go-round and wondering whether Roy Hodgson is the solution to Watford's malaise. And I say that knowing that we're recording on Tuesday morning and he may have lost the confidence of the board by the time we go out on Wednesday night. Anyway, for the next hour, don't go anywhere because the football's on. Yes, welcome to the show. Our guests this week are two men who both retain some youthful vigour. It's Ivo Graham and Mark Simmons. Hello, chaps.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Mark.
Ivo, start with you. What have you noticed this week?
Well, Ian, I don't want to do anything to cheapen the romance of Kidderminster Harriers' agonisingly close game against West Ham on the weekend. But I was moved and confused by something their chairman said at the game, which was that his father was a Kidderminster Harriers director who died in 9/11. And I wasn't the person to dig this up, but my goodness, I'm glad someone did. Not to make light of his father's death on the 11th of September 2001, but he died of heart trouble in the Kidderminster area. So I'm not saying that was the main news from Kidderminster against West Ham on the weekend, but it was very, very strange.
I would say. Moved and Confused, a good title for an Edinburgh show, I think, to be honest with you. Mark, what about you? What have you noticed this week?
This week, I noticed, because it went viral, that a Rotherham fan ran onto the pitch during the penalty and kicked the ball away. I was telling my mate about it, and he asked if it was on the spot. I was like, I don't think it was pre-planned.
No.
Start with a joke.
Thank you. If you just let us know when they've happened, and then we'll be aware. I sort of find that slightly odd, really. Like the fan thinks if I kick it away, then they can't retake it.
I like the idea that there might have been a fan in the ground that wasn't really paying attention and looked up and just thought, that is the worst penalty I've ever seen. Completely the wrong direction.
Yeah, by a bloke who doesn't appear to be in a kit. Anyway.
No.
So while the rest of the football community slogged on through the bleak January afternoons, that's right, keep working, serfs, rest is only for the rich, the Premier League players took some time out to take stock, rest up, get some sun on their backs, and in Ivan Toney's case, slag off their employers. Ivo, teams in all the other leagues have to play more games. Don't they deserve a break as well? I mean, talk about one rule for them and one rule for us.
Well, that's exactly it. I think it's despicable that Cristiano Ronaldo and co are in some cryotherapy chamber in Dubai, whereas the best the Swindon Town players can hope for is to have their feet nibbled by some fish in Brunel Shopping Arcade. I think there should be a sort of exchange system where every top flight team has to take a lower league team with them on their winter break. And perhaps the draw is done live on TV like the cup. That's the dream, surely. You go, oh, we're going to Dubai with Man United. Superb.
You know what? That's really not a bad idea, I think, Mark. What about all the games, Mark, that need to be played? I mean, shouldn't they have constantly been playing Burnley v Spurs?
I know. I just think it's madness that there's so many games to play and then they go on holiday for 2 weeks. That's just not how the world works. Like, you don't get that with nurses, do you? Like, all these massive long waiting lists, and all of a sudden you see the nurses are on some party boat shouting F the NHS.
Which is a reference, of course, to Ivan Tony. We'll talk about him. Ivan, I was saying that pretty much everyone went to Dubai. I mean, it is the perfect place for people with huge amounts of money and no taste whatsoever.
I don't know. I mean, I think you can get some of that glamour in certain parts of Wiltshire, to be fair.
Yes. And the weather is comparable as well, isn't it? What about Ivan Tony, Mark? He slagged off Brentford. We won't say what he said, but it doesn't do to criticise your employers. And we talked to the people at BT Sport, who, by the way, are excellent employers and lovely human beings. And they were very understanding about this sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can slag off your employers like that. And like you said, I mean, I was telling that to the idiots that run BT Sport the other day.
Sorry, I rather preempted your joke there, I'll be honest.
I might have just got cancelled.
Yes, go and join Jimmy Carr in his rather nice house.
I've got to say, Ian, the amount of times I'm in a nightclub and some young lady comes up to me and asks me to swear at Ian Stone into her phone, it takes the constitution of a saint to resist every time. But I do, because I know which side my bread is buttered.
Do you know, that story would not have even been believable without the thing about me in it. I just can't imagine you in a nightclub, to be honest with you.
I think we should give the guy a break. I mean, he's a multimillionaire. He's in his 20s. He's on a party boat in Dubai. He's drunk. He's chatting up a glamour model. We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if I had a pound for every time I was in that situation, I'd have £2. We also had quite a few moves in the transfer window. Mark, West Ham bought absolutely no one. Are you happy to crack on in three competitions with what you've got?
No, Ian, I'm not, am I? course not. And I don't think West Ham are happy either, because at the weekend they clearly had a plan to make it just two competitions. But Kidderminster ruined that, didn't they?
Well, we will talk about that in a bit more detail in part two. Ivo, what about Swindon signings? Can they push for the playoffs?
Well, we've sort of been pushing for the playoffs all season with even a whiff of automatic promotion. And now we've slipped out of the top seven for the first time in some time. It's not been a terrific January. We've had some of our best loan players recalled. You hate to see a promising loanee recalled in January. And also, we have let go of a legendary central midfielder, Anthony Grant, the general, on the premise that we have enough strength in depth in central midfield already. That was before Jordan Lydon ruptured his Achilles and Lewis Reed got a three-match ban for picking a fight with the referee after the final whistle of a match he didn't even play in. So we're now looking very stretched, and we could do with the general back. It's been a bad window.
I mean, West Ham haven't got enough players. Like, so the main thing we've got to worry about, we've got injuries and having to get rid of players for kicking cats.
Yes. What is that? News.
I thought French people liked cats. I mean, they like taking photos of cats. They've got an app especially for it called Snapchat.
It was a nice journey to get there. And I like the way that we got there in the end. As for Arsenal, all I'll say is that we may not have the squad depth we were hoping for, but with everyone on the team bus getting a spare seat next to them, we'll be the most COVID-friendly team in Europe. Not that we're in Europe, obviously. And on a personal note, I'd like to congratulate Barcelona on the 40-plus goals Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is guaranteed to score in the remainder of the season. Ivo, I wanted to talk to you about transfer rumours. They are ridiculous. I don't know if you saw the story about Alexander Isak's car. He's got a personalised number plate and it was seen outside Selfridges and sent Arsenal fans into meltdown on Twitter.
I didn't see this. What did the personalised number plate say?
Would you believe Isak? I think it's 15AAK or something like that. But they knew it was him. It wasn't a Nissan Micra, well, is the point I'm making.
To be honest, Ian, the main thing I've taken away from that is I didn't know you could park right outside Selfridges. It truly is one rule for them and another for us.
Right. What about Newcastle? Mark, they bought pretty much anyone they fancied. Trippier, Guimaraes, Target, Wood, Byrne. I mean, they've increased the average height of the team, haven't they?
I mean, it's easy for Newcastle, isn't it? And I mean, they've clearly got a strategy. Burnley are one of their biggest threats, so they buy their best striker. But it's not as easy, is it, for teams like Arsenal? Because Arsenal's biggest threat is Arsenal.
Yeah, the sooner you get cancelled, the better, I think. There have also been some managerial changes in the last few weeks. We'll chat Roy Hodgson later in the show. But let's talk about Frank Lampard being the new boss at Goodison Park. Mark, do you think the fickle fans of Everton will take to Frank?
I'll be honest, that whole generation of football players becoming managers, I don't like it, Ian. It makes me feel ancient. They're my age and they're doing the old man job. Like, I find it really weird. Let's be fair, that generation of players, they are going a bit mad online as well, aren't they? If we're not careful, we're going to end up with loads of teams sort of NFTs.
I mean, you know, on the point about managers being the same age as you, I'm only a couple of years younger than the Archbishop of Canterbury, all right? And the Governor of the Bank of England is youthful, some sort of dilettante compared to me. Ivo, Dele Alli, gone to Everton, trying to resurrect his career. Is it the problem with players who ghost into positions that when they're not playing well, they're essentially just invisible?
I suppose so. I mean, he made himself as visible as possible at his grand unveiling on the weekend in a very fetching hat, which Glenn Hoddle has already got annoyed about, I think, on this very channel. As someone who cherishes the 2018 World Cup as one of the greatest periods of my life, I would love Dele Alli to get back to full form. I think most Tottenham fans feel genuinely sad at the way it's turned out. I fear that Everton is not the environment you want to be rebuilding right now. I think that there's going to be a lot of impatience, a lot of very high expectation. You've got a manager who himself is still a rookie coasting on a lot of sort of good lad energy. And I think that things could turn quite quickly, hat or no hat for Dele, if the second half of the season doesn't get off to a good start.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. But there, I mean, as Mark said, there's a lot of these guys now managing in the Premier League, Steven Gerrard, or in the top two leagues, Steven Gerrard doing okay at Villa, although not as well as you think. He sort of has the energy of someone doing better, I think. Wayne Rooney, Mark, is doing pretty well at Derby, although obviously he's at a bit of a disadvantage, 21-point deduction. Patrick Vieira at Palace, dare I say it, Mikel Arteta at Arsenal. Are these guys hired for their tactical nous or their address book, do you think?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean their address book. They know a lot of people and they're still in touch. I guess they played with guys who are still playing.
Ian, so they can nobody just phone has up. An address book anymore.
Do they not?
No, it's all on your phone.
Mark, are these guys hired for their tactical nous or their phone address book? It's still an address book, isn't it?
There's no addresses in there.
All right, we'll let that go. What about this then, Ivo? Do you think Roy Keane could be the calming presence that Sunderland need?
I don't think that's the case at all. I think if any Sunderland manager from the last few years ought to be brought back, it should be Paolo Di Canio. He wasn't given long enough. Roy Keane is you know, sort of popcorn passion. Paolo Di Canio is genuine, sort of politically unstable, in his blood fire. And, you know, he did a knee slide after they beat Newcastle. Obviously, Newcastle are currently two divisions away, but Paolo should have another chance. He never got to get out of League One with Swindon. He should get a chance to do so with Sunderland.
All right. Well, if Roy Keane doesn't work out, I'm sure Paolo is waiting in the wings. That's it for part one. When we come back, it's the FA Cup. We'll chat Manchester United's penalty woes at Old Trafford. And Glenn Hoddle will be taking us back to his England debut, or for those watching in North America, debut. See you in a short while. Part two of the Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, and our guests, Ivo Graham and Mark Simmons. Mark, you had a bit on Roy Keane you never got to do. What was it?
Well, I'll just say, I can't see why anyone would want to go back to Sunderland. So I'm thinking there's something else going on. Maybe there's like a new Netflix series of Sunderland Till I Die, possibly. Because let's face it, if you're a Netflix executive and you want drama, shouting, fights, who would you rather have in charge? Roy Keane or Paolo Di Canio? Either of them would be good.
Yeah, either of them will work, actually. okay. Now, last weekend saw the return of the FA Cup and an early exit for Manchester United as they lost at home on penalties to Middlesbrough. Man United have only won one out of the last eight penalty shootouts at Old Trafford, and that was against Rochdale in the League Cup a few seasons back. Ivo, is it the expectations, do you think? Are lower league teams getting better at taking penalties? What's the explanation?
I thought the penalties were absolutely superb. Sol Bamba and a man called Lee Peltier, who barely contributed to the match in normal time, took... I mean, they were the penalties, essentially, that Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho were brought on to take in the final of the Euros. Absolute top bin stuff. And it's another bad night for Ralf Rangnick, who's not exactly capturing hearts and minds.
No, I don't think he is. I mean, everyone knows he's a caretaker. Although whenever I think of a caretaker, I think of a beige coat and a mop. But, you know, he obviously doesn't walk about like that. Mark, Ronaldo missed a penalty in normal time. Mm. I mean, essentially, Man United have almost broken Ronaldo. I sort of feel like the management are going, you did what to Ronaldo? You're never getting another Ronaldo.
I think it's if you're Ronaldo and you're arguably the best player in the world and you're taking a penalty against someone that's like main job is a plumber, it's a lot of pressure because you can't miss, can you? Like, there's no excuse. Like, if you miss against a top goalkeeper, there's a good excuse, isn't there? I'm sure he feels terrible. Like, he, because he says he loves the fans. Although every time he scores a goal, he does turn his back on them.
I should point out at this point that the goalkeeper of Middlesbrough, I'm not sure of his name, is not a plumber. Although he might have tremendous plumbing skills.
Arguably a sort of...
But that's not his main job.
Semi-elite.
He's talking down about the Championship and lower leagues, Ivo. It's outrageous. There was also, Ivo, a brilliant performance by Nottingham Forest, who proved that their win over Arsenal in the third round was no fluke by crushing the holders Leicester 4-1 in the fourth round. I've got a soft spot for Forest. The City Ground was rocking on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, it's easy to forget that they're just 11 plumbers at the end of the day. You know, the Championship is a league that consists entirely of handymen. And what Steve Cooper has done to get the best out of these, you know, 0 hours chances is terrifically impressive. So, yeah. You know, I think it's great. I mean, joking aside, I think Steve Cooper is, I thought he was fantastic at Swansea. I love what he's doing at Nottingham Forest. He conducts the fans like an orchestra. He's told the players not to take the City Ground atmosphere for granted. It would be amazing to see them back in the Premier League next season if that's not getting too far ahead. But of course, as we've established, it would mean that they would have to cancel their second jobs and go full-time, which is a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure, which I wouldn't wish on anyone.
It's true. Leave your tools in the dressing room, lads. There you go. I mean, that's the thing about the Championship, isn't it? Not great football, but the showers are excellent. Mark, there was a rather unsavoury incident when a Leicester fan ran on the pitch and threw some punches at celebrating Forest players. I mean, what's the solution? Do we need moats around football pitches? You know, towers with sharp shooters, more agile stewards. What do you think?
Well, it is a knockout competition.
Beautiful. That's why he earns the big bucks. Not on this show, obviously. Nobody does that. Ivo, the big shock came on Sunday night as Bournemouth from the National League overcame Bournemouth from the Championship to set up a fifth round tie against the mighty Everton. Ivo, it's the romance of the FA Cup, isn't it? We have to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Rescued at the death the weekend after the, you'd have to say, quite fortunate victories for Chelsea and West Ham. It was bore on bore, but it was anything but. I feel sure that a newspaper must have done something slightly better with those basic ingredients. But I thought it was great. We've had an interview from the Bournemouth chairman saying that he can't wait to play Everton because he's a big Chelsea man and he can't wait to meet Frank Lampard. That feels the wrong way to prepare for the game against Everton. But I mean, absolutely fair players. As someone who got to flirt with a little bit of FA Cup magic when Swindon hosted Man City and then got thrashed, admittedly, it's nice to see Bournemouth flying the flag for the Vanarama.
Quite. There was almost another huge shock at Kidderminster. We talked about this as they led against West Ham going into injury time before big bad West Ham snatched first of all the win and then half an hour later even the chance of penalties. Where's your sense of fair play, Mark? It's little Kidderminster, for goodness sake. They've got excellent pies. How could you do that to them?
I mean, we tried our best not to.
You did.
Watch the game. I mean, yeah, I mean, even as a West Ham fan, I felt terrible for them. Especially the last goal when we won. I thought, give it, like, when it comes to penalties, you know, it's anyone's chance. But did you see the Times headline? They made it sound really sinister. Did you see that?
No.
Hang on, I've got it here. It's, West Ham's Declan Rice breaks heart in FA Cup, then joins Kidderminster victims in showers.
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there?
What's going on?
It's non-league football, mate. Anything goes. Anyway, now it's time for my favourite game. Not mine, people who played the game. This week, it's Glenn Hoff. Hello, Glenn.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, your favourite game. I mean, we mentioned this before and you said, oh, I've got too many to choose from. Pick one, maybe two.
It really is tough to choose one, I've got to say, because there's club and there's country, for instance, and obviously there's World Cup. So it's a tough one when I was asked about it. But I think I'm going to have to go with Bulgaria, England-Bulgaria, my debut at Wembley as well. Thinking back, you know, that was... That was very, very special for me, just to play for your country at Wembley.
Isn't it the whole build-up as well? So you get the call from the manager. Yeah. Who was the manager?
Ron Greenwood at the time.
So he phones you up, he says, Glenn, you're going to be picked in the squad.
That's right. I mean, that's the excitement of the first port of call is, I've been picked in the squad. But I really didn't think I was going to be playing.
Yeah.
It was a qualifying match. It was such a surprise when he told me. And it was like he named the team on the bus after training the day before. And then you have that overnight where you're trying to sleep.
Did you sleep? I was going to say, did you sleep?
Yeah, not much, if I remember. You're just excited.
Of course.
And what made this one quite awkward and difficult was that it got postponed. The day on the Wednesday, it got fogged off. And I thought, oh, typical, I've missed my chance. But fortunately, they played it on the Thursday and I managed to score on my debut and I made the first goal for Dave Watson. And scored a really good goal from the edge of the box. And we won and we qualified and went off for the Euros. So it was a very, very special time, you know, to have the family and everything there for your debut. And it went well.
How was it walking in the dressing room thinking, oh, I'm playing with this lot?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's the adjustment. It's not usual. It's not the normal going in with your teammates that you play with and you sort of live your life with in many, many respects. But no, so you're going in with different people. You don't know them as well as you do your teammates. I was at Tottenham at the time. So, yeah, all of that is an adjustment as well as what you've got to do on the pitch. And I think it's the stuff off the pitch, actually, that I learnt. As soon as you can become relaxed and feel part of the team, part of the camp, you'll perform better on the pitch. But it did go well for me. I often think back, you know, and think, if it was on the Wednesday without the mist, I might have had an absolute shocker. But it worked out really well for me on the Thursday.
And one more question. What was it like playing with good players?
Well, don't disrespect. I had some good players at Tottenham as well to play with. But, no, it was lovely. I mean, I had a couple of World Cup winners at Tottenham. But, no, it was great to go out there and play with, you know, the likes of Kevin Keegan, Trevor Francis, people like that. You know, it was... It was great, but you have to step up, don't you? It's a challenge and the excitement of it, but it was a proud moment as well.
Oh, scored one, made one. Nice.
Well, and then I didn't play for six games. I must have done something wrong.
Just scored two and made two. Thanks, Glenn. Nice to speak to you.
Pleasure. Cheers. Absolute pleasure.
That was Glenn Hoddle talking about his favourite game, England against Bulgaria at Wembley in 1979. Ivo, do you know there were three players in the team called Raymond? I mean, what? I found it interesting. Clements, Wilkins and Kennedy all played in that England team. About this, when you're sort of starting out as a comic and then you get to be in bigger dressing rooms with essentially better comics, it is intimidating, isn't it, Ivo?
Yes, it certainly is. I mean, I'm now trying to wind the clock back to my first dressing room with Ian Stone. I
think I was quite nice, wasn't I? I tried to make it okay for you. You're stepping up, lads, but you'll be all right. I'll look after you.
What I've always found impressive about you, Ian, is how you managed to say on the surface very supportive things while psychologically sort of managing still to get in a few jabs. It's very neat, actually. It's very unsettling.
I can't believe you noticed. I thought I kept it better hidden than that. Mark, the game was fogged off on the Wednesday and they ended up playing on the Thursday. It sort of seems they couldn't do that now, could they?
Well, that doesn't happen, does it?
Well, fog does happen.
But not on football pitches, does it? I can't remember the last time I saw it. How's that stopped? I don't understand.
Do we still have fog? It'd be good if people could text in. Have you seen any fog recently?
Even mist. We'll take mist as well, to be honest with you. We don't mind.
I did love hearing him talking about, he said the team got named on the bus, but I thought they were always called England.
Yeah, Glenn Hoddle, Ivo. I mean, did you see him play live? Wonderful football. Obviously, as an Arsenal fan, it was hard to appreciate what he was doing. But, you know, now that that's all done, you think, oh, yeah, the boy could play.
Well, you haven't let it go. You're still giving him sly digs about it on BT Sport.
I am.
But I've waxed lyrical about Glenn Hoddle and the early 90s Swindon team on this show before. I was too young to enjoy it. I've devoured all video footage available online. He was better than his own players. It was frankly inappropriate, and he ditched us as soon as we got promoted. Fair enough.
Yeah. We used to sing, we all agree, Rixey is better than Hoddle. And I wanted to turn around and go, oh, I don't agree, to be honest with you. I'm not sure it's a good place to do that. Anyway, a quick game of Who Am I before we go to the break. I give out some clues, and our panellists have to guess who I'm talking about. Okay, I was born in 1981. I played for 9 clubs in 3 countries, including England, France and the USA. I won the Premier League 3 times, as well as the FA Cup twice and the League Cup once, all with the same team, as well as an Intertoto Cup with my boyhood club. And I played for my country 56 times, scoring 10 goals and appearing at 4 international tournaments. Who am I? We'll tell you in about 2 minutes. Part 3 of The Football Zone. I'm Ian Stone here with Ivo Graham and Mark Simmons. Before the break, I asked, who am I? I was born in 1981. I played for 9 clubs in 3 countries, including England, France and the USA. That's not including. Those are the 3 countries. I won the Premier League 3 times, as well as the FA Cup twice and the League Cup once, all with the same team, as well as an Intertoto Cup with my boyhood club. And I played for my country 56 times, scoring 10 goals and appearing at 4 international tournaments. Who am I? Mark, I'm going to come to you first.
I don't know.
No? Okay.
I can't think. It's the France and only England, France and USA.
Yeah. Including all those 3 countries. you know what? I've always wanted to say this. I'll have to hurry you.
I can't. There's no point guessing because the people I'm thinking of didn't play in France.
Well, so. Then, okay. I'm going to put this over to Ivo Graham. Any thoughts?
This is the point where history dictates that I say Tony Cascarino for a cheap laugh. but I'm pretty certain this one isn't Cascarino either. I mean, the only way of trying to narrow it down is trying to think of who's gone prominently to America and played for LA Galaxy or whatever. But all I've got is Beckham and Wright Phillips. You know, and Bradley Wright Phillips has torn it up in the US, but I don't think he played for his country 56 times and scored 10 goals. God, Ian, is it
tough question?
No, it's not tough, really. It's right in my. It's I can't even blame this on 90s. Mm. This is a noughties player. And I think it's.
I'm going to give you the answer
because
Joe Cole. Joe Cole. Joe Cole won all those trophies with Chelsea, and he played for the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
And he won
and he won
with West Ham. He won the Intertoto.
He won the Intertoto Cup. Mark, I mean, it's the only trophy you've won for quite some time.
Well, Well, when it came up, that's what I thought. And who did he play for?
He played for Lille, didn't he, for a bit?
There you go. I'm glad you said that, Ivo, because that wasn't up on my screen. Anyway. Anyway, it was Joe Cole. Unfortunate, guys, but there is another chance to redeem yourself in a quiz later on when we do Call Yourself a Fan, although it might take half an hour while you're reading the answers. Anyway, one of the least surprising events of the last few weeks was the sacking of Claudio Ranieri at Watford. I imagine after being manager of Watford, Claudio will now want to take up something a bit safer, like rodeo rider or deep sea diver on an oil rig in the North Sea. Anyway, hoping to come to the rescue is good old Roy Hodgson. Now, we wanted to hear from someone who knows him well, and for that, we turned to star of stage, screen, and recently so insightful on DIY Pundit, it's Liza Minnelli.
Oh, hi. I'm Liza Minnelli, and I want to talk to you about Roy Hodgson. Roy and I, well, we were a thing many years ago. Stop it. And we've kept in touch over the years, because we share one love. Soccer, a.k.a. a football. Roy is prolific. Yes. Did you know he's managed 16 teams in 8 countries, and he speaks 5 languages? 6, if you include the language of love. Of course, he's best known for managing England. And back in 2016, my Roy was unlucky when England had to face the mighty Iceland at the Euros. Yes, football is a crazy sport, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. Nowadays, Roy is managing Watford FC. Did you know? He's the 12th manager in 6 years. Go, Roy. 12th time lucky, boys. I certainly felt lucky when I was with Roy.
Yes, that was Liza Minnelli, a.k.a. Suze Kempner. I've got a feeling we'll be hearing more from Liza through the series. Mark, it was never going to work out, was it, really, between Suze and Roy? She was in Cabaret, he was managing in Sweden. But we all wish Roy well, don't we? It's like if Sir David Attenborough became a manager, we'd all support that team, wouldn't we? And their pitch would be excellent, I imagine.
Of course. And I think he's going to have a great time, because old people love a bit of temporary work, don't they? I've heard they've already come to an agreement with B&Q for him to move on.
I can imagine him with a name badge. I think that would really work. I mean, it's funny, Ivo. You know, Mark brings that up. Managers are getting older. I mean, Ranieri was no spring chicken. Roy is one of the oldest managers currently working. I think Eduardo Rea in Albania is also 74.
Right. I'm glad Rea got the shout out that is so often overlooked on these kind of shows. I thought Hodgson was tying it up at Crystal Palace. I didn't think that Watford was going to be the Ocean's 11 style one last job that pulled him back in. And, you know, as we've already said, you've got to feel it would be lucky if he makes it till the end of the season. Yeah. You know, Crystal Palace.
As in job-wise, or?
Now.
Sorry.
It's a perfectly fair question to ask, you know. I mean, Liza said, 5 languages, managing 16 clubs in 8 different countries is very impressive. I don't know if anyone saw his press conference, and they asked why he took the job. And he said, and I quote, "This job, when it came up, was one I was never going to turn down because it was quite literally the siren call from the mermaid as the sailor passes by on his ship. They got the right mermaids going past the right ship." I mean, Ivo, it sounds like there were other mermaids going past offering him chances to manage other teams, but they were the wrong mermaids.
But I would love to see a TV show of Roy Hodgson trying to identify the right mermaids, whatever exactly that means. But obviously, as a proud classicist, I'm delighted to see any references to the Odyssey creeping their way into the football world. And obviously, Roy Hodgson loves the Odyssey because he's still got his first edition.
Because he's very old.
I'm afraid that was the angle I was pushing again, Ian. Dismal stuff.
By the way, I should say Burnley played Watford in the Premier League at the weekend and it was 0-0. And if anyone managed to sit through the whole thing, let us know and we'll organise some sort of therapy to get you through the rest of the season. Now, the Africa Cup of Nations finished at the weekend with a favourite Senegal beating Egypt on penalties. It was followed almost straight away by a no doubt uncomfortable shared private plane back to Liverpool for Sadio Mane and Mo Salah. Let's chat about the positives first. Mark, Salah v Mane, Egypt v Senegal in the final. That's the final that everyone into the Premier League would have wanted.
I thought private planes are comfy.
Lumpy sofas, apparently. That's what they tell me.
But it was a great story, wasn't it, the final? Two Liverpool players going head-to-head. And there was drama, wasn't there? Like, with the penalty that got saved. Did you see Salah did the thing where he covered his face and was telling him which way he was going to shoot? It was either that or he forgot his mask. I could never be too sure. Maybe he's just really worried about the germs. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, Ivo, Salah taking the last Egypt penalty and never got to take one. Do you not think the best player should go up first?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a high-risk, hubris strategy to give yourself the glory of the fifth one and then, you know, risk not even getting to take it, as was the case. But no less than he deserved for briefing his own goalkeeper against his club teammate mid-match. That sort of admin, that sort of treachery admin, should be tied up before the start of the game.
I heard a thing, I don't know if this is true, I think it's true, that the goalkeepers on their water bottles have little notes saying which way the players are going to go, which I think is a brilliant idea, but they have to make sure they get rid of the label that says still.
Yeah, I'd like to see a goalkeeper be sparkling in their saves. I mean, there were some other brilliant moments. There was one of the best free kicks I've ever seen for Comoros against the host Cameroon. Although Comoros did have to play that game with a left-back in goal because all three goalkeepers, one was injured and two had COVID. There was also, Ivo, a referee calling time on 88 minutes in one of the group games.
Yes, I mean, I think though there were lots of lovely positives about the tournament, it was at points quite short on entertainment, but that's still not an excuse for literally just cutting the matches short early. You've got to play out the 90, however boring it is. Burnley versus Watford, it was 90 minutes. There are a lot of people who would have liked to blow the whistle at 88 minutes there, but you just can't.
I thought the left-back playing in goal was great. I thought he did really well, made some great saves.
He did. And obviously,
COVID being an issue, that's the trouble with goalkeepers. They catch everything.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want to know how much this tournament means to people in Africa, watch the celebrations in Senegal when they're doing the trophy parade through the streets. Okay, now it's time for our regular quiz, Call Yourself a Fan. First up is Mark Simmons. It's three questions about your club and a couple of general knowledge. Are you ready, Mark?
No.
Great, we'll begin.
Yes.
The club was founded in 1895, but only became West Ham United in 1900. What was their name beforehand?
Something Ironworks.
Yes, yes.
Oh, da.
It's a river in London.
Thames Ironworks.
Yes, indeed. One point to Mark.
I don't care if I get them all wrong now.
It was too painful. Number two, West Ham United have retired two shirt numbers in their time. Can you give me either of the numbers?
Can I give you the players?
You can give me the players if you want.
Bobby Moore.
Yep. Number six.
Hurst.
No, it was number 38, Dylan Tombidis. It was an Australian striker who died, sadly, at the age of 20. I think we'll give you a point for that. West Ham have had a long list of legendary captains, but who was the first club captain from outside the British Isles? We were talking about him earlier.
Di Canio.
It was Paolo Di Canio. 3 out of 3. Ivo is quaking as we speak. Okay, a bit of general knowledge. How many clubs have never been relegated from the Premier League?
Oh.
Oh.
I mean, there's 12.
6. Manchester United, Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool, Chelsea and Everton. And Last question. Which team have lost the most Champions League finals?
Oh, God. I don't know. Barcelona.
Unlucky. It was Juventus with 7. Mark scored 3 out of 5. Ivo's turn in the hot seat after the break. I know how delighted Mark is with that. See you in a short while. The final part of the football's on. Mark Simmons got 3 out of 5 and call yourself a fan. Now it's the turn of Ivo Graham. Ready to go, Ivo?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling me sir. I appreciate that. It's what I said to you the first time you came into a dressing room. Swindon Town, officially formed in 1879, but were called Swindon AFC, and they had one other name before settling on the name Swindon Town. What was it?
I do not know. The Rockin' Robins.
No, that's a great answer. Think of your classical education, Ivo.
Okay, the... what?
You should have said Helen of Troy. No, it's Spartans. It is the Spartans.
Okay.
That's what they were called. I do love the idea of away teams turning up at Swindon and the captain going, "This is Swindon." Anyway, number two. In a survey conducted by the Football Fan Census to determine who fans thought their closest rivals were, Swindon fans concluded that Oxford United is their biggest rival. And we all know that. How far apart in miles is the Swindon and Oxford are? Sorry, how far apart in miles are the Swindon and Oxford grounds? I'll give you a 2 mile swing.
It's a lovely question. And I'm going to say 35 miles.
Oh, it's 30. Unlucky, Ivo. It's funnier that you got it wrong. The Swindon Town Hall of Fame was launched in 2011 by inducting 3 players. John Trollope, Don Rogers, and which other player?
Colin Calderwood.
Unlucky, it's Paul Bowden.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, still naught.
Naught.
I know. You'll never be able to show your face in Swindon again. You will, actually. Anyway, general knowledge. Who's the youngest person to ever manage a Premier League side?
Is it formerly of Swindon, Ryan Mason?
It is Spurs. He managed at the age of 29 years and 312 days. I think he only managed them for 2 games, didn't he? And then one in the League Cup final. After Daniel Levy went, "We don't want a trophy, so we're sacking Mourinho now." Number two, who holds the record for the oldest player to score a hat-trick in Ligue 1 at the age of 37 years and 31 days?
In Ligue 1?
Playing for Nancy.
I don't know, and so I will say just a classic journeyman, Yakubu.
No, it's Tony Cascarino. And Ivo, if you haven't watched the series before, you won't realise how Ivo definitely knew that answer. Anyway, Ivo scored 1 out of 5, and that means Mark won that particular match 3-1. I think it's a surprise for Mark. Now, a moment we've been waiting for quite some time. It's not only the people in the particular town he's visiting that get the benefit of a sprinkling of Ivo Graham's stardust. This week, it's also the viewers of the Football's On. Yes, the Fellini of the football short, the Bergman of the beautiful game, the Spielberg of soccer is back.
I'm back at the BT Sport Grindstone for my first ever night shoot. When Ian Stone asked me to make a video for this week's show, it simply had to be about Wolves. Partly because of my deep respect for any Football League founding member, partly because boss Bruno Lage was just named Premier League Manager of the Month, and partly because I'm gigging at the Wolverhampton Grand this evening. So it's time to say, in the language of Lage and many of his team, Bimvendo a Molyneux. Feel a bit of a Wally vlogging in the rain after the watershed, and there's a real risk that the time of day isn't doing wonders for my visuals. Ideally, I'd have a proper lighting team, but I blew all of the budget on a drone for the Brentford game. Still, as the city motto goes, out of the darkness cometh the right. After the darkness of relegation to the third tier a decade ago, Wolves now have their feet or paws firmly under the Premier League top table. It's a sort of rise which shows what can happen when you allow yourself to dream of a millionaire super agent joining forces with a Chinese multinational. Jorge Mendes' extensive contacts have brought Wolves more Portuguese exports than my father's collection of fortified wines. A crack team of Iberian hunks in small, medium and large. After Large's compatriot Nuno left to be caretaker manager of Spurs last year, some fans were underwhelmed by his replacement. But, like my father's port, his team really started to show their worth over the festive period. Sadly, the manager of the month curse struck immediately this weekend as they went out of the FA Cup at home to Norwich in club captain Connor Cody's 300th game. Last night, he was dining in hell. Tonight, I'll probably be dining in Nando's. The result came at the end of a dry January, where Wolves did little to significantly strengthen their squad and saw slippery winger Adama Traore take his gym membership and his baby oil off to Barcelona. Wolverhampton is home to the Department for Levelling Up, the government HQ brought here last year by local-born Robert Jenrick MP. And if Large is serious about levelling up his own thin squad into the European places, they'll need to stay fit and beat the teams around them. The good news, they get to play Arsenal twice this month. Ivo Graham for BT Sport, hoping against hope that there's a towel in my dressing room.
That was Ivo Graham outside Molyneux. Ivo, your first night shoot. I hope the catering was of a decent standard.
The peri-peri chicken wrap shoved into my pocket had congealed by the time that I managed to tuck into it. And broadly, I learnt a lot of things from the experience. But Molyneux, rain or shine, day or night, is a stunning and proud stadium. And it was an honour to sort of essentially skulk around it like a trespasser.
I mean, it's Mark, Wolverhampton Wanderers, it's hard not to have a soft spot for them, don't you think? Is it the gold shirts, do you think?
I'll be honest with you, I don't really know anything about Wolves. And so I did do a bit of research because I didn't want to look like an idiot on television. I looked up some facts and apparently they're native to North America.
They are, originally. Although they've lost the accent, I would say that. I mean, Ivo, it's incredibly hard to play against. And Bruno Large doing very well, a larger-than-life character, giving it large and providing largesse for the people of Wolverhampton.
Right.
That's all I can come up with.
If you can't pick one, chuck in all three.
that's it, though, isn't it, really?
I wasn't able to resist either, so I'm hardly judging. He's great. He's handsome, he's charming, and he's got them playing some very solid football with his talented but thin squad. They are not scoring a lot of goals, but how are you feeling about your two games against them in quick succession?
We're all rested, mate. Our squad of 12 is well able to handle whatever is thrown at them. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Robert Plant is the director as well, Mark. Did you know this?
Well,
you do now.
What I can tell you about Wolverhampton is Wolverhampton is what happens to Northampton when there's a full moon. And that is all I've got to say about Wolverhampton.
I feel we're coming to the limit of your Wolverhampton knowledge here. Okay, let's move on. This week in history, the 4th of February 2017, Arsene Wenger was in the middle of a four-match touchline ban and he found himself sitting next to his gardener at Chelsea. It wasn't arranged that way. This week he's gardener, next week at Norwich you'll be sitting next to your second footman. Ivo, he said he didn't know it was his gardener. His excuse was, I have a big garden.
I mean, it's a charming side to Arsene Wenger that I wasn't previously very familiar with, the horticultural empire of the great man. But I don't know. I mean, is he a gardener?
No, he has a gardener.
Sorry, I've fundamentally misunderstood the anecdote there. That's
what they're for. He just invites him to football every so often. Hey, don't you worry. You sit here. Mark, if you have a touchline ban, I actually don't know. Are they allowed to communicate with the team at all?
I mean, I like, do you want what I think or the actual real rule? Like, I don't know. But I'm sure that you can't really. I mean, no. What are you going to do? Interpretive dance? Like, I don't know what you can do from there. But I mean, it's not unusual. Like, he was getting banned all the time, wasn't it? Do you remember when Arsene Wenger was banned for 9 years from winning a trophy?
That's not funny. Anyway, let's move on to the 6th of February, 1961. Danny Blanchflower became the first person to turn down the big red book on This Is Your Life. Do either of you know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Ian, I'd love to be briefed by it, by a peer of the Archbishop of Canterbury, no less.
Do you know, if we take that bit out of the show early on, people will go, why did
that's,
you say
that's
that?
Fine. I think people will just say, that makes a lot of sense, actually. It's very much the energy that Ian brings to proceedings.
It's a multi-faith thing going on in this country. Yeah, it was just a huge programme on BBC One where they'd gather all the relatives and friends and people you'd worked with over the years in a sort of quiet room and they'd keep it secret. And then Eamon Andrews would sort of ambush you with a book and that would be your life. And Danny Blanchflower went, no, this is an invasion of privacy and refused to be on. I mean, you wonder, Mark, they must have just basically gone into the other room and said, no, we're not doing it, just go home, you know.
Do you think maybe he saw the big red book and just thought he was being sent off?
That's how they did it in the past. They had a big red book and they had some lithographs of some of your fouls from earlier, all printed out and ready.
He said he wanted to be private and it worked, didn't it? Because I have not got a clue who he is.
If only he'd done This Is Your Life, you'd have known all about him. You'd have met his teacher from 1942. Might have been Roy Hodgson. We don't know. 9th of February, 1974. Johan Cruyff persuaded his wife to have a cesarean section 2 weeks before due date so he could prepare properly for the next match, which was against Real Madrid. They won 5-0 at the Bernabeu, and he scored and was man of the match. Ivar, you can't argue with that, can you? I mean, the ends justified the means.
I suppose the ends justify the means, although the ends also include Jordi Cruyff, who, you know, maybe if he'd been allowed to gestate a little longer, he'd have been able to emerge a little further from his father's shadow, rather than being essentially rush released so that his dad could get yet another hat trick.
Yeah, made his debut about 2 weeks too early, is what you're saying. Yeah.
I think it's important that they had an early birth, because if it was a late delivery, it might have been offside.
It for the Football Zone. Thank you to Ivo Graham, Mark Simmons and Suze Kempner. We'll see you next week. And you can listen to the Football Zone podcast on all the regular platforms. Just go online and search for the Football Zone and we'll be there.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.